I'm LA Theater Bites, and you're listening to LA Theater Bites podcast. I'm here with Radio Roguelike Team to talk about their latest project, William Shakespeare, A Midnight Summer's Dream, a live radio play. What is Radio Roguelike all about?
Awesome. Thank you so much. Yes, my name's Ari Stidham. I'm joined by Beverly Jean and Bradley Gosnell.
Hi.
I want to say hi, Bradley.
I waved.
Radio Roguelike is a radio play live show that we do at the Roguelike Tavern. The first one was on August 16th, and the next one's going to be on November 16th, where we're doing Hamlet, and we do Shakespeare plays as radio plays. And it's a rollicking good time. Patrick, I mean, you were there. It was really a party. But yeah, that's how I would describe it. Bev, you wanna do one?
Did you have something to say, Patrick?
Oh, I was gonna say, yeah, I treated it way too much like a party. That's the reason it's
it's not a good time.
That's why it's not becoming review. Yeah,
I
definitely lost that too much. They have that oatmeal stout beer that I really really like, and I liked it a little too much.
Yeah,
I had a good time. It is a good time. It's a good vibe. That was the first time ever being at that bar. I just like the whole neighborhood, very low-key vibe of that place. It was really dope. So I had a great time. Yeah.
Yeah, and we're just creating a show that's both a vibe and an entertaining thing, and there's audience interaction. It's a good time.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the cool things about anything live is there's that it's impossible to like fake having fun in a weird sort of way. Like, you know, you can sort of innately understand that the people working like working together. Yeah. And you can understand the people sitting in the front row like sitting together. And it felt like for both audience and for performers, there was a veil of formality that was removed that I think, you know, brought a lot of joy to me as a performer. And I think the audience as well. And it's just so, it's fun to be in a place where it feels like that is not only expressed, but also a key element to what makes the show sing.
So it's a live show, but instead of doing your traditional regular play or doing something, you know, people do all kinds of changes of Shakespeare all the time. This is not something new. It's always done in different ways. But you guys are like, nah, let's do it as a radio show instead and do it live. And a radio show is definitely more auditory and more about the sound effects of these kind of things.
The big difference between our show or, say, Shakes on the Rocks or a lot of these other amazing shows that get done where it is bar Shakespeare, we are doing a radio play of it. So there's live Foley sound effects and music involved in our productions, which does, I think, set it apart as far as a different live offering. What live does for the radio play, I'd say, is it completely brings the barroom experience of Barroom Shakespeare to the radio listeners at home. So you feel like you're there because you can hear how rowdy the crowd is.
And certain stars shot madly from their sphere to hear the sea maid's music.
Oh, I remember. Shot bright like a diamond.
It's sort of the difference between a high quality live recording of your favorite band and listening to the album. That's how I would discern the two. And then also coming to the show live is, we hope, what people want to do after they see and hear the media that we've created from that event, because we really love the Roguelike and they create this environment for artists and people who really believe in the type of work that we're doing. So we want to get people in the door and we really love that spot.
And you can see on the actors' faces, especially when we're doing a comedy, just the interaction between the personalities on the stage that you get to see in the room. You hear in the recording, but there's just such a brightness to that in the live performance of it all.
Oh, I'm as ugly as a bear!
Yeah, that's definitely one thing I noticed. I've only seen one other live radio show before, and it was a lot more scripted and planned out. This one seemed so chaotic and all over the place, which was part of the fun, which I really liked about it. And it seemed like you guys added I think it was. I think it was Bradley. I think Bradley was in the show, and he had such an animated approach to it. And you know, there were, and it was like some people had scripts in their hands, other people didn't have scripts in their hands. So it was like you knew that you were like, oh, okay, some people really prepared for this, and or they're really into Shakespeare and they just have Shakespeare memorized in their heads, which that's impressive. If you're just you just randomly go and they're just like, oh, do you know Midsummer Night's Dream? Of course they do. What part? Anytime.
That's pretty funny. But speaking directly to Bradley and Delaney, who played Puck, and Amanda, who played Lysander, Megan Rubel, who played Hermia, Michelle Wycliffe, they are definitely actors who have not just played these roles before, but played many roles in Midsummer before, because it's one of the first Shakespeare's, if you are a Shakespeare person, that you learn and read. So like, that's the beauty of that show, is the chaotic nature. And as Bev put it, of a comedy, especially in a rowdy environment like that, because everybody knows it. It feels like they're singing an old song. It feels like they're covering a song that everybody knows, you know, like singing a Beatles hit or something with a really good jam band. Brad made me laugh so much that night, but I'm going to pull a specific Bradley clip for you. I also just can't pass this up. Beverly really helped design the night, and she played Peter Quince, who is the director within the play. So like, yeah. That was also, I want to give her props as well, because she, not only was she also in it, she like carried it structurally, because it was such a chaotic mess.
It was such a fun experience, because I was like, the more I do for the show, the more prepared I am to play the part in the show. It's like every time I do another task, it's just another thing Peter Quince also did that day.
It's very meta, isn't it?
It was.
Yeah. Beverly, did you, as far as the parts, I don't know how did these parts get distributed? Did you like really want that part? And since you're a part of the show, you were like, I'm going to play this and I'm going to, how did you guys decide what role you guys were going to play for the night?
Yeah, I was, Ari kicked it to me and he was like, what are you interested in? And Peter Quince was one of them. And I was like, I've never played it. I played both boy lovers and I think that's it. I've never played Peter Quince, but it's very my personality of caring a lot and being stressed out. Yeah. So I thought it would be a great opportunity to get to play that on stage. And then we just started going through our Rolodex. And I have a lot of Shakespeare. I'm involved in Shakes in the Rocks and a couple other bar Shakespeare's in town. And I just have a lot of friends who are very talented. And I was like, who is interested and wants to come play? And then Ari, Ari has another great group of friends. And they've worked through some Midsummers before, both in household front yard productions and bigger than that. So we started going through his Rolodex too. It was just so fun to see who was excited and available. And a couple people were like, I really want to do that. I can't do it, but please text me again. I was like, you got it.
Yeah, for me, I mean, ultimately, you know, I think I define playfulness as like something you would do again for its own sake. You just enjoy doing it. And to what, you know, Ari and Beverly were saying is that the people in the Rolodex and the family we've built and the people that have just done Midsummer a million times since they were 12. And it's a really unique community in that regard, but a vast one. People keep wanting to do this show and people keep wanting to see it and people keep wanting to, you know, find communities and continue to work with those people. And to me, that's playfulness, something that you enjoy doing that you want to do again, just because it was fun the last time. And that playfulness is a freeing of an ambition. That playfulness is a feeling of security. That playfulness is joy. And those are things that, you know, we associate with art, wonderfully and gratefully. And to me, that's the big takeaway, is that the audience is invited into that, And you know, it's an exciting experience because play can be a foreign thing for some people as adults, yes. or as just people moving through life. Sometimes it's hard to get an excuse to be somewhere where you're enjoying something for its own sake. And I think that invitation more than anything is what's so exciting and exciting about this play.
It's a live text, it's a living text, it's a living story that's still, I mean, you know, how long it's been since it first came out to now, which has been, it's been decades and decades, and people are still enjoying, you know, how I see it as one of those, the earliest, you know, it's a cartoon.
Yeah.
It's a cartoony, silly story with a bunch of gods messing with people. And, you know, it's like what I enjoyed growing up watching, you know, like Xena and Hercules and those episodes when they would come in and the gods would be messing with people and Hercules would be, stop messing with those people. And then, you know, Hercules would come in or Xena right. would come in, these kind of things. You know, this is nothing like Midsommar. Midsommar did not have Hercules or Xena, but you get my point. It's
nearly
It's the gods messing with people and a lot of silliness and a lot of fun. And I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
Yes. I mean like just the headline response to that is like, absolutely. Yes. I think also radio as a medium, like radio theater, is about imagination and creating like a collective imagination within the room. So there's definitely this element of people are already bought in, you know, if you know the play, but if you didn't know the play, there are mechanisms in there to warm you up to it because of the medium that we're creating like afterwards. So the beauty of something like what you just described is you're not seeing fairies on stage. You're really seeing people in a bar talking to microphones or screaming to microphones at time. But you can see that they are fairies. You can see that there are, you know, changes in the weather. You hear the sound effects. You hear them walking through the forest, albeit sometimes comically and poorly. But you hear certain parts of it, and it adds to the ambiance of the night. And if you know the story, then you're already plugged into something that everybody's plugged into. And it's almost like the performers, their flourishes on the thing that you are aware of or the thing that you were imagining, those flourishes are the reason people tune in. And half the time, it's because people do have a drink in their hand, I think, that they feel connected to what's happening. Because if you see somebody on stage, I mean, I'm not saying all the actors should drink, but I do think if you see an actor take a drink and you are drinking at a party with them, there is some sort of like complete loss of artifice that happens. And now you're seeing somebody and you're in it with them. And that's why what Bradley just said was so astute. I feel like I'm adding on and on and on and on, but yeah, that's where the magic is. The fact that we are doing it together, we're creating it together, imagining together. And, you know, it's a shared experience and it'll never be the same. So yeah, that's why I'm in it. Definitely the joy of doing that. Creating
and,
a special,
you know, like that. And the art doesn't always have to be put in these very fancy places that are expensive and inaccessible to people and stuff like that. Art can be, I like the idea that art can be done in a bar or in a place and you guys are doing it for free. And it doesn't have to have a price tag. A lot of times we want to put a price tag on art and these kind of things. And to some, this is a philosophical discussion because to some extent, it's like, I do think that people don't respect art enough. And they should be paying more for art and appreciating it. But at the same time as well, it's like, art can also be very expensive. I'm a theater reviewer, so I get into a lot of my shows for free. So it's like, I remember those days when I didn't get into shows for free, and I was like, this is really expensive. I'd like to go to this show. I'm not going to this show. You know, so yeah, you know, so yeah, so there's an accessibility thing to it, and it's cool that you guys are putting on something that yeah, someone can go. Well, they have to get to the bar, and they have to make it there. But if they make it there, they just have to pay for a beer, if they, you know, and to support the show, and yeah, that's it.
Two item minimum, and there's free parking, and pretty much so much parking.
Yeah,
it's crazy. There's so much.
Yeah.
Every time I throw a show at the Roguelike, I let everyone know. The best thing is parking's off your plate. Like, they have it. It's like a grocery store shopping center parking lot size, so you can just park anywhere.
Yeah, I think, you know, ultimately that it comes down to accessibility, and that can be financial, that can be location, mm-hmm. that can be time. You know, you have to go somewhere at the right time. But sometimes it's about material. And I think Shakespeare feels unavailable to so many people. And so to do a version of Shakespeare that feels intentionally available at a place that is intentionally easy to get to, at a price point that is intentionally, available, I think, you know, it's the combination of all those things that makes, or for me anyway, makes me enjoy doing it, and I think makes it feel special. So yeah, absolutely. It's important.
So as far as the, because like I mentioned before, you see some people with scripts, you see other people with scripts. What is like the prep time, the preparation for setting up one of these things?
Ari's been talking to me about doing this show for a little while, and we are finally ready to do it. We were trying to figure out a venue, and the Roguelike came up because I do other shows there with another production company. And I knew that they needed shows in August, that some of their other regular shows were like on vacation. And so I was like, we got the venue 2 weeks in advance. And so Ari and I immediately started finding a cast, finding a time to meet online so we could rehearse a little bit and like talk about what characters we're going to be doing, like not exactly like setting exact intentions and everything, but talking about what we think would work and what they're going to bring to that specific role. And it all came together in genuinely maybe 12 days. And we had from like, we have it, and then everyone is together, and we've met twice, and then we were there on the day. And it was flying by the seat of our pants in the best way, because with this cast in particular, we knew we were on such a short timetable that we had to work with people we know really well. We all worked together so well. It was just like the first day of school of sophomore year. Like, you all are already friends. We're going to get in there. We're going to do the thing. And then we brought in the singing element, which came off so well and was so beautiful. There was, Ari, do you want to talk about that for a second?
Ari sure. has a wonderfully like bassy voice. I was very surprised. That was very nice. Yeah.
Oh, thank you, Patrick. Yeah, yeah. That's very kind of you. So, you know, at the heart of it, Bradley and I have edited, I don't know, probably nearly 10 plays between us together and or separately. Bradley runs the theater department at Oaks Christian High School. So one of the productions that he did, I think 2 years ago, was our edit of Midsummer Night's Dream. And prior to that, we had done it three times at the house that I used to own in Tarzana, which had this massive front yard. And so there was already a shorthand for Midsummer, which is why it was the perfect play. So it was like a pseudo revival of some of those productions, a big revival of the themes that Brad had carved out in the Oaks Christian production. And then the adaptation that you saw was done by Beverly and I over pretty much two afternoons, just sort of combing through the script together and adapting it for radio. And then the music element came in because the plays that Brad and I have worked on previously, we choose public domain songs to populate them. So like, we have a production of The Great Gatsby that has five or six public domain songs, And from that list, there were a couple other ones that fit Midsummer, I thought. So that's when I got to work, basically, as Beverly said, 2 weeks before we dove in, with this band named Dodo in Argentina. And they're just amazing. They're a funk band, and they helped with three or four covers that Jenna Bird and I sang that just sort of peppered in that radio play element, where, you know, you would have a commercial break, or when there's an intermission, the band would start playing. This time for Hamlet, I know this is a long-winded answer, but this time for Hamlet, we're going to have a three-piece band. And that's like the biggest like upgrade, I think, because Midsummer was so fun and it came together so quickly. Now that we have this 2 month sort of runway for Hamlet, everything can be a little bit more intentional. We know what to expect, you know, as far as how much more rehearsal time we need and mic placement and setup. So this is going to be a much more intentional effort than Midsummer was, but the magic of Midsummer we're hoping to capture again. And I don't know if I've just sort of gone on and on and on. Is there anything I should add, Bed? Did I miss anything?
No, I think it was great. And yeah, Jenna Bird starting off the night with like those three or four songs, and then you as well, just really set the tone of sort of that old 1940s, 1920s kind of feel of when radio plays were super popular. And it was just such a nice tone set for that evening.
Baby, dreaming a while, scheming a while, you're sure to find well a happiness. And I guess all the things you always pine for, gee, I'd like to see you looking swell, baby. Diamond bracelets.
I don't know if you've ever heard of a band called Snarky Puppy. They're like a jazz fusion funk group, really good group. But what I really liked about some of their stuff, they would actually have like listening parties where people would go live and they would listen to the music live through headphones while they were at the show, so they could actually hear the recording live while they were there. And when I was thinking about a live radio show, I was like, why couldn't you, since it's a live thing and it's a radio thing, couldn't you do the exact same thing with kind of what you guys are doing?
No, that's, so I'm sort of separate from Radio Rogue. Like, I have a Sleepy Hollow radio play that I've been tweaking, and that might be a cool thing to try. So I'm going to put that nugget in my head, but I'll let you know if anything comes of it. That's pretty cool. Like a live, because I have seen, I think the name of the song was Lingus.
Ooh, I love that. Yes.
Corey Henry on it. Ooh. I love that video. I love that track. And
I watched it way too many times.
At the end of it.
Yeah,
everybody's sweating by the end of it. It's one of those incredible like jazz performances. But that's definitely a cool element. It could be like definitely utilized for clips and content and stuff, at least for a cool like one-off maybe. Hamlet at the Roguelike, November 16th, which is a Sunday. The curtain will be at 7, probably around 6:30, the band will start playing. Delaney Milbourne is playing Hamlet. Delaney played Puck in this past production. Polonius is going to be John Ryan Benavides, who played Snug. Those are the two official people that we've locked. We're holding a few auditions for big roles as well. King Claudius, Gertrude. I think there's a few others that we're holding auditions for because we want to keep growing the community, of course. But yes, November 16th, come to the Roguelike Tavern.
The Roguelike Tavern, baby.
Free. You got to buy two drinks, but no ticket.
Or food,
yeah.
How did you come up with the name? I'll never tell anybody how I came up with my name. You'll never know, everyone.
Wow. Should I keep mine a secret? Wait, what's happening?
you might want to.
I have a particular set of skills, and that particular set of skills is just holding the thing in my head until the perfect silly or pithy name comes to me. And genuinely, that's what happened with Radio Roguelike. I thought about it over the week without thinking about it, and then when I went to talk to John, I was like, John, I got an idea for the name too. John is the owner of the Roguelike Tavern, great dude. And I was like, I have an idea for the name, Radio Roguelike. And he was like, ooh, you got me. And I was like, yeah, put us in. But yeah, it just, there's something fun, and it's a good reflection of what we're creating, which is this theater in an informal space, quotations, that just makes it more alive and more in front of the audience and for the people. We're theater for the people. And I think that that's what we're going for.
Yeah, I had a worse name.
Oh.
Yeah, what was it?
Yeah, Shakespeare with mics and a bar. Please see it, please.
It's a little long for the poster. Yeah.
Well, you know, we're going to abbreviate it. But that's a secret.
Yeah. No, it's great when you have restaurants that are, like, very straightforward. You know, like those, especially when you're, like, in Orange County and some of these, or spots that are a little out, you'll have a lot of restaurants that are, like, very straightforward. Like sushi. You're like, you know yes. When you want sushi and you in the restaurant that just has the letters sushi written on it, you're like, yes. Oh, I know exactly where Done. To go. That's where I want to go. They didn't want to go any further. They didn't even want to put their name on it. It could have been like Amy's sushi or Bob's sushi. No, it's just sushi for the guy that wants some rice and fish.
Nice.
Yeah. How about you remember when it just used to say restaurant? Like it was an old West. Town, you ever see those?
That's amazing.
I've seen that before. Yes. Yeah. You have to be in the boonies. You'll find these things. Yeah. You'll find these things. You're like, oh, restaurant,
classic,
perfect. That's exactly what I wanted. Yeah.
That is what I was looking for. Yes. Yeah. All the information I need. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No. Sometimes, you know, as much as I do enjoy, I know we're getting off of theater right now for a little bit, but as much as I do enjoy. Some really good food every once in a while. And you know, California is really good for this. California is good for just some of those simple burger places. You they'll always have like a very simple name. It'll be Bob's or Sam's or something. And it's just that generic hamburger with the chili fries and stuff like that. It's very, but they always, it's always comes out great in California. And you never like plan to go to these places. They're the places that you're just driving and you're like, I'm hungry. I've been right before I go to the show. And you're like, Sam's.
Yeah.
Sam's is like probably going to be
a char. Like, are you talking about like a char broiler? Sometimes I'm talking they'll do like
yes.
Yeah. Sometimes they'll do like fried zucchini sticks, but they all have the same powdered strawberry chocolate and vanilla milkshake.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Styrofoam.
They almost all taste the same.
The yellow wrapping, some of them only take cash, kind of like Astro Burger vibes. I love a place like that, California.
Astro Burger vibes, and I know, oh my gosh, I can't believe you said Astro Burger. I've been to Astro Burger plenty of times. That's 100% the kind of place I'm talking about, yeah.
Yeah, I love those.
Love those places. They should get lots of respect. But yeah, it's a you know, as much as like you have like chain restaurants that have trouble with consistency, it's amazing how these ones don't. Like they all kind of have a very similar vibe. It's amazing. They're beating out the chains.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I appreciate them, and I don't think people give them enough respect.
Yeah. Put some respect on Astro Burger's name. That's what I've been saying.
Finally, yes. We're talking about the real issues.
Thank you.
Serious issues that people really haven't taken.
Vegan friendly Astro Burger doing the Lord's work.
They have vegan stuff at Astro Burger. See, I don't look for that stuff. Are you vegan, Beverly?
Yeah.
Oh, you would look for it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, there you go. Good options over there.
Hot dogs and burgers. Let's go.
I don't think Astro Burger realized that they were going to get some
advertising
on the show. But here it is.
Astro Burger on Gower. Been there forever. Classic.
We all appreciate you.
This is wild. This is wild what's happening.
Keep living, Astro Burger.
Astro Burger on Gower. That's the end. We've reached the end of the podcast, right?
That's a good one, Brad.
Listen, it's great. Yeah. 101 Cafe closed down. My heart's broken. Yeah. But the Astro Burger and Gower is still there. So
still there.